But the big difference is same product, different sticker, same contract manufacturer. But also, we out-service them, we out-hustle those companies as well, too. Service, delivery. People always lead on price. Price, 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 price. And I hear this all the time. But the truth is, if you don't have quality, right, if you can't deliver, there's no serviceability. Price really doesn't mean all that much.
Hi, I'm Katie Miale, Director of Marketing for Approved Networks, a brand of Legrand, and I'm here today with our Senior Director of Business Development, Mika Landau, and I'll let you introduce yourself.
That is correct. I am the Senior Director of Business Development for Approved Networks, formerly U.S. Critical Approved Networks Champion One.
Yeah.
All rolled into one big happy family now with Legrand.
Right?
Yeah. But so here we are.
Do you even know why you're here today?
I don't.
Right? Come on in. We're going to talk history.
I'm assuming you're going to tell me.
Yeah.
And I just got a little bit of the information here now that I'm kind of looking through. So
yeah. So basically, we're starting a podcast and we have such a huge knowledge base with our engineers that actually create product and our sales engineers, all you sales guys. So the future podcasts are going to be more technical and about the industry itself and what we're doing and where we're going with the industry. But before we do that, I thought we should let people know why they should even listen to anything we have to say. So we're having you here today to kind of go over the history of the company. You haven't been in this industry for a few decades now, and really kind of talk to us about Legrand's place within the data center industry. We were recently at Nanog, and I know one of the questions that you were asking a lot of people was how much they know about Legrand in the data center space. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into a little bit of the history of the company.
I'm excited. Great to be here.
Yeah. So give us a little bit about your story, primarily the story of Approved Networks and how you ended up landing here.
Oh. It's a long story. This could be a long
podcast.
It could be a long podcast. So yeah, Nanog was really interesting as well too, because it's always insightful to meet our customers and prospects and learn more about the struggles and some of the issues and why they're at Nanog. But when I got into this industry in the 90s, optical transceivers really weren't a conversation at all. So if you know this industry, if you've been around this industry for a long time, and I have been since the 90s and left and came back in, it's a changed quite significantly even over the past couple of years. And the technology life cycle is moving very quickly. And for the first time, 400, 800, and 1.6 is going to be a bit of a roadblock for some of our partners. So you're right. A lot of the questions were geared around 400 gig ZRs, et cetera, et cetera. But my journey into this was back in the 90s. I grew up in Orange County. And you've heard some of this maybe before. And by the way, everything I talk about is everything that everyone else does.
Right.
I have the luxury of talking about it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then everyone else actually has to implement.
Someone else has to execute.
And do. So yeah. You mentioned engineering, development, test labs, et cetera.
Yeah.
So basically, I have the opportunity to go out and discuss this with our clients and then our development team and the smart guys behind me create solutions and customization for our clients and stuff. But my journey into this was early 90s. Orange County became the little Silicon Valley, which I think most people know. Big Silicon Valley, San Francisco, and us down here. And this was primarily, you know, small town stuff, orange groves, eucalyptus trees. And a lot of us kids that were just getting out of high school in the late 80s or mid 80s for me. I was younger.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm older. I'm older than everybody. But what happened?
The
90s. This literally became the little Silicon Valley. So a lot of my friends, you know, just started looking into memory back in the day. And some of the issues that we have in optical transceivers today are very similar to what we had back in the memory. Memory is a very different product. It was a major DRAM on a third-party board. But what was happening is a lot of the schools were going out and purchasing a laptop for $1,000, and it had no memory in it. And back then, I think the max was like 4 to 8 megabytes, right? Which just sounds ridiculous now,
right?
4 to 8 megabytes. But what would happen is the school would go out and spend all this money on laptops, which were in the day, everyone had a desktop and now everyone was moving to laptop. And then they realized, well, I have to populate it with memory. But the memory was so expensive that they had blown their budget and they couldn't afford OEM original memory. So this whole third party memory market started, which I prefer OEM alternative
OEM
market.
Agnostic.
The difference was is that you would go out and buy major on major, which meant major DRAM chips on a major board, and we started building major chips on third-party boards. The optical transceiver market's similar, but what we do that's a little bit different now with the optics is if, say, a Cisco uses a tier one manufacturer for a specific build, we do the exact same thing. So my journey into this was, we were all memory guys, we all knew each other, and just like most industries and cabling or whatever that might be, everyone kind of knows everybody, and it becomes a very incestuous market. So Irvine and Lake Forest became kind of the third party memory mecca back in the 90s. And then when the dot-com bubble burst, everyone went their separate ways. But some of the partners that we had that were search engines that weren't, the brand names they were back in the 90s like they are today, were our customers for memory products, and came to us and started asking, hey, you sold us this memory and we're having similar problems with the cost of these little pluggables going into the back of our switching equipment. So the smart guys behind me and our development team, our founder, Kurt Dudeman, who used to be our director of marketing and went to, he was, an art major in Chicago.
Oh, an art major,
yeah.
Big shoes to fill.
Yeah, had looked at some of the, large search engines and some of our financial firms we were supporting. And can we produce this product? Memory was a little different. Again, it's not coded, right? It's hot swappable, where a laptop, you have to shut it down, start it back again, and all this other stuff. But really, between the old development guys we worked with in the memory industry and to where we were with the optical transceivers, they just started looking, is this something we can produce and manufacture and offer an alternative to, say, Cisco, for example? And I'll use Cisco because they're the 400-pound gorilla.
Right.
And everyone, it's Cisco, Arista, Juniper, whoever you want to plug into that. But what we started doing is just buying some switching equipment, buying some cards. We built a little OEM agnostic lab, and we just started doing end-to-end connectivity. Can we produce this product? Can we code it correctly? And one of the things that was interesting about that is the OEMs gave us the opportunity to develop this market, because it used to be an optical transceiver you can plug into the back of a switch and it would just work. And then the OEMs opted to start putting coding on the optical transceiver, right. And that was really to lock out competition.
Yep.
So what they did is they locked out competition so they could demand more money, but it also created this cottage industry again, just like third-party memory. And from there, this was probably, I'd say, early 2000s. And since that time, it's become a much more mature market. We all have the pioneers and the early adopters of this, and you can guess who they are, the hyperscalers, the big search engines, the big financial firms, et cetera. And now we're getting to the point where everyone realizes it's a mature market, it's developed, it's proven, the products work. And the value out of what we do as a company is we've been here for 25 years and we're supporting some of the biggest telcos, et cetera, is that we do have an OEM agnostic lab. So for a lot of our partners, they do have Cisco, Arista, Juniper, Mellanox, Dell, Fortinet, Palo Alto, et cetera. And their ability to become to one company and be able to acquire all of that equipment from us and be able to test it and validate it and prove out performance before they purchase it is a big selling point for us. But my journey into this was just the 90s into memory, and then we all morphed into networking companies. And today, there's a handful of legitimate companies out there, but it's also created, like I said, this cottage industry of a lot of people that don't have the technical prowess that we do or don't have the staff and the people that you mentioned at the beginning of the call. So, but here we are 25 years later, and now we're officially a Legrand company as well. So, it's exciting to be here.
yeah, it really is. I've only been around not nearly as long as you, about 6 years, and I've seen so many changes. So as you mentioned, the OEMs are basically locking out competition so they can charge higher prices. What does that mean for third-party or OEM agnostic? How does that pricing work for us to be able to provide the same quality and yet compete on pricing?
It's a good question. I wish I was Cisco sometimes, and again, because the same product.
Or Juniper or Arista.
same product, different sticker. Is that when, just like memory again, is what happened was is people would go out there just for demand purposes to go find an alternative cost savings so they can stretch their budgets. But when people first started purchasing memory, just like when they first started buying optical transceivers away from the OEM, there was issues. People didn't know how to do the coding. People didn't have the equipment. So what they were doing is what's called flash coding. We're selling open MSA, non-coded optical transceivers. But each one of these appliances speaks a different language, right? So you have to have the ability to do that coding. So initially, third party, just like in memory and just like in optics, had a bad reputation. People had tried it, they were risk averse, they were afraid to come back to it again because engineers are solution driven, they're not money driven, right? But behind them, someone has a budget. So when we first started doing this, there was a couple of companies out there, they'd had their struggles, but once we figured out how to do the coding and all of this stuff, now we're like a true OEM, I'd say almost, but the difference is I don't have Cisco on my sticker, is just the truth. Is that, you know, I always used to say, and in my signature when I first started was same product, different sticker.
Right. So right? We're buying from the same manufacturers that the OEMs are.
Yeah. And you know, most of the product is built overseas, but, you know, we say tier one. And if people are going out and they're looking for alternative optical transceivers, everyone's going to say they're tier one provider.
Right, right. Yeah.
That's just one of those buzzes out
there. Marketing.
It's marketing. We only work with tier one providers.
Right.
The nice thing about what we do that's a little bit different than the OEM is I think we actually do more testing than the OEMs do. Because what we do is we actually vet multiple contract manufacturers for the same technology.
Right.
Right. So it may be that, say, an Arista customer has 100 gig LR, which is just a single mode fiber 10 kilometer part. And they say, hey, Arista builds with this manufacturer. Well, I can comfortably say we use that same manufacturer. However, we've also vetted two or three other contract manufacturers as well, too. So if there's supply chain bottlenecks, delivery issues, or other concerns, at least we have someone else in our back pocket. Also, the OEMs rely heavily on the contract manufacturer to do the coding, stickering, testing, etc. Where conversely, we bring it into our facility, we do all the validation, coding and testing internally. And then we also do end-to-end testing as well for our clients. So if it's running at 80 kilometers between two different switches at a specific OS, we're also doing that as well too. And Cisco, Arista, and Juniper typically aren't going to say, yeah, we're going to help you with Mellanox, and right. We're going to help you with Dell or Fortinet or Palo Alto, where we have the ability to do that. So the OEMs, I'm here because of those companies. So thank you everybody for providing this cottage industry. But the big difference is same product, different sticker, same contract manufacturer, but also we out-service and we out-hustle those companies as well too. Service, delivery. People always lead on price, 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 price. And I hear this all the time, but the truth is if you don't have quality,
right.
If you can't deliver, there's no serviceability, price really doesn't mean all that much. So the emphasis for us has really been on delivery quality and the serviceability behind that as well too. Another thing is that we don't require our customers to acquire an SLA for future support. So once you purchase right. Our product, it has a lifetime warranty. We do advanced replacements. We do spares. All we ask for serial numbers. Where conversely, with some of the OEMs, you have to buy a service letter agreement to get support after the fact, and they don't offer, you know, lifetime warranty on the product. So to combat that with the OEMs, we have no choice but to offer better service and support and delivery and all of this.
Right. So actually, you bring me to my next question. Speaking of the SLA, what kind of legal or intellectual property or kind of questions or entanglements come up when we're dealing
all
with...
All the questions.
Yeah, all the questions. And I ask you some of these knowing I know the answer because I started at the same time you did. When I started, I was in sales, and you know, this is probably the number one thing that we always have to lead with. So.
Yeah, and I respect that as an engineer, again, it's a solution. You know, and it's their butt, right? Create a solution. Yeah. It's got to work. And whatever traffic is passing through those ports is time, money, commerce, revenue, all this other stuff. So I understand that. However, you know, it's really against the law for the OEMs to void a warranty. You know, and everyone has their way of describing this. It's like buying a car and then going putting a Midas muffler.
Right.
And then you go back to Toyota to service your engine, but they won't service your engine because you have a Midas muffler.
Yep.
The truth is it's against the law for them to lock out competition, to void warranty. Yeah. Now, if the product in the network is our product, we're fine with advanced replacing, doing spares, troubleshooting, and all this other stuff. So if it comes down to the OEM versus us, and the OEM is saying it's going to void the warranty, they're not going to service their equipment, everyone knows about the Magnuson-Moss Act. Everyone's familiar with the antitrust acts like the Sherman Act. And we just have to remind people that if that is going to be the case, and if those companies are saying that, I'd like to see that in writing. As a customer, I'd like to see that in writing as well, too. If you're telling me that I'm going to go out and purchase all of your equipment and you're going to lock out all of it's almost like collusion. They're colluding to, you know, but I would like to see that in writing. Like if I was one of these customers. So the reality is most people.
And so what you're saying is they won't put it in writing because they know it's
typically
not legal.
No. Yeah. And we've heard rumors of some of the big, you know, we're a direct model and we do support the channel, but we do hear some of the channel partners that are, you know, hey, I'm a platinum partner, I'm a gold partner, whatever, do get pushback from the big OEMs about using OEM alternatives. But even the companies in the channel, they have to compete with other companies just like we do. So what they'll do is they'll offer all OEM original equipment, but then say, however, if you're looking to save money, if there's a budgetary concern, here's an alternative product, and that's approved networks, we can guarantee it works, et cetera. And sometimes the OEMs will complain and be upset about it, but when it serves their interest, they're totally fine with it. In fact, we've even sold to most of the major companies out there when it serves their interest best, and then they'll go right back to the original, only buy OEM original equipment. But long and short is, it's against the law for them to void the warranty. However, they are correct in saying if the defect is ours, of course it's ours.
And
it's our responsibility to do the advanced replacement. And the big difference between optics and, say, again, memory again, is these are all hot swappable. Most people have redundancies in their network, and they realize if it does fail, you take one out, plug another one in, and you're up and running again. So it's a really easy fix. It's not a difficult thing where you're shutting down switches, reloading OSs, or whatever you have to do. But that's a good way to lock out the competition. And then even beyond that, even with their deep discounting, you know, we're still significantly more productive and less expensive than those companies. So I wish I worked for Cisco sometimes or Arista or Juniper. I don't know how they get away with it.
No, you're not. No,
no, I know that. No, I know that. No, just from the sheer.
We need you, man.
Yeah. No, just the cost of the product. That's
right.
Right.
Saying. Oh, yeah, exactly. So what are the key factors that your customers consider when choosing third party? Like you've already alluded to pricing, service, availability. What's one that we haven't talked about?
The availability is a big part of this. Is that if you want to wait, sometimes optics are an afterthought. You know, we hear stories of switches taking 22 to 30 weeks, maybe longer, cards taking that long. And on the 22nd week, we get a purchase order.
Right.
So, but just because of demand, we have to have inventory. You know, as a lot of times, you know, people are doing refreshes, the optics are an afterthought. You know, so I mentioned the same tier one contract manufacturers as the OEM. Sometimes it's just as simple as that we have that contract manufacturer sitting on our shelf in large quantities. So our customers will say, I don't have the opportunity to wait 12 to 16 weeks for the contract manufacturer to deliver to my OEM, the OEM deliver to me. However, if you're telling me it's the same tier one manufacturer, it has the same code, and when I plug it in, all features are enabled and it works just fine, then great. So the serviceability is important, but also local inventory is hugely important. So, you know, we have Cleveland, obviously, and then we also have California as well, too. So, but the serviceability is a big part of this as well, too. And then the OEM agnostic piece. Some of our big search engines or whoever you want to pick, you know, they're always acquiring companies, and a lot of times they're Swiss army knifing their networks a little bit. Yeah. And maybe they're primarily Cisco, or maybe they're primarily Arista and Juniper, but there's always, you know, a connectivity issue or even a product that's outside of the OEM spec or parameters.
Yep.
And a good example of that would be how we wound up getting into one of our big data centers is that just at the time, Juniper didn't make a 5-meter DAC cable, 100 DAC cable. So we went to Germany, we worked with contract manufacturers, and we produced that on behalf of the Juniper customers. And now, did we retain all those Juniper customers after Juniper launched that 5-meter? Probably not. But we were the first one to do that. The 100 gig ZR would be another example of that. Arista didn't have 100 gig ZR. Our high frequency traders and those platforms were looking for that ZR. We went out and we produced that. Now, was it on their was it on their part number matrix at the time for Arista or Juniper? No, it wasn't. Now it is. So maybe some of those customers have decided to go back to Arista, but we produced it. Also, the 160 kilometer parts when the OEMs were only going 80 to 120. And that was our owner, Kurt Dunham. I have to give him credit. You know, he'd fly overseas, fly to Taiwan, you know, and if our clients had a need, he would just fill demand. And then there was all the PopCon ports along that, along with those as well too. You know, the 1 gig, 10 gig, 40 gig, etc. So I think it's just going above and beyond, and basically doing anything to try to support those big accounts.
Yes,
I don't have the luxury. I don't have the luxury of saying, hey, that's going to be 16 to 22 weeks is my whole point.
Right.
We have to have inventory. We have to have a development team. We have to have the lab coding and testing. I can't just say, you know, we're a big OEM. I'll get back to you in a couple of weeks, or it's going to take 30 weeks till we develop that.
Right.
So again, we out hustle the competition.
Yeah, that's true. And like Brian Patton, our VP of engineering, always says, we're on the bleeding edge. You have to be even a little bit further ahead.
And the trailing edge, too. Yeah. You know, we've even seen some of the OEMs discontinue product.
Right.
In fact, we got into a big telco, and it was because one of the big OEMs had discontinued product and was saying 6 to 8 weeks to be able to deliver, and we delivered in 4 days. And
that's
it was awesome. Just that, well, yeah. What's funny is it kind of opens up the conversation, like, how did you do that?
Right.
And why does it work? You know, what's different about this than that? You know, and it's... there is no difference. So even if it's on the trailing edge, we're still supporting that as well, too.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I forgot about that piece. Yeah. So let's talk, we're talking about availability. So let's talk about the pandemic situation. So how does that affect, and how far have we come? How far out of that are we really?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
Because I almost feel guilty talking about the pandemic, because why a lot of my friends were losing jobs and restaurants were shutting down, et cetera.
We were here. Yeah.
This was a boon for us.
It was.
Is that, you know, most people were on Zoom, you know, doing Zoom calls.
Yep.
Most people were watching a lot of Netflix, and everyone was working from home for the most part.
Yeah.
So this was a unique situation for us, because we saw a massive increase in activity. The data centers were going crazy, and everyone was gobbling up as much inventory as possible. After the pandemic, we have seen a bit of a downturn in the data center, but even in that 6 to 8 months, we've now seen a massive uptick again. But I'd say COVID was a boon for us, unfortunately. I hate to say it was a, you know, a bad time for America and the world, and a good time for approved networks, but that's just
a
reality.
Well, it was also a very interesting time, because at the same time that was going on, we actually had our first merger in early 2022 with Champion One. So then it was before we even merged with Champion One, we still had a presence of our parent company, which was US Critical, you mentioned earlier. And then by the end of the same year, when everything was crazy, we're working from home, we're working with people we've never met before, the private equity firm that bought us and merged us with Champion One flipped the whole thing and sold us to Legrand. So the three brands, Champion One, Approved Networks, and US Critical, became Approved Networks, a brand of Legrand.
Well, Legrand, you know, it's interesting, because we just did Nanog.
Right.
And I'm wearing the Legrand swag.
And
most people, a lot of people know Legrand. Legrand's a big company. They're multinational.
But do they know Legrand for what we do for data centers?
No, they don't. And that's where I was going. That's where I was going with this. You know, you say Legrand and people just have heard the name, but they don't realize that ServerTech, it's Raritan, it's Starline, it's Ortronics, it's Quicktron, it's all these different companies kind of rolled up. And I think this was kind of one of the last pieces of the puzzle in the data center for Legrand. Is, you know, in a previous life, there's a couple of companies that I think are good at what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to be the eighth employee at one of those companies.
Right.
And so I was familiar with Legrand previously. And the brand itself. But I think this is one of the last pieces of the puzzle they were looking to, fill into the data center. It's a little bit different than, say, a cabinet, a rack, a PDU. It's a little more complicated and a little more technical at times. But again, it's been a great opportunity for us, because what we found out is most of the Legrand brands are in the same data centers, or in the same search engines, or the same streaming services, or whatever you want, or financial firms. So
telecom companies, broadband.
And that was interesting, too, because we're almost like the best brand no one's heard of, right? If you're a big telco, and people know the big three or four out there, they're familiar with who we are. And that's, again, because it's they're the pioneers and the early adopters. Just because of volume and demand, they had to embrace OEM alternatives. They have to drive down cost. And even if they bought directly from all the tier one manufacturers, they would still have one-offs and you know, legacy equipment that they're trying to fill demand on. So everyone knew who they, you know, Champion One was on the ISP telco side.
Yep.
And for those that they didn't know, Approved was kind of an online brand.
So talk a little bit about US Critical, just to back up a little bit. That was our parent company. And that's where we kind of originated some of our larger accounts that kind of established us. And then Approved Networks came along later. It was born to be the online version, correct?
And it took on a life of its own.
It took on a life of its own.
Thanks to me. No,
thanks to you, as soon as you showed up.
No, that's not true.
You were not the first sales representative, a live person offline for Approved Networks. But it grew. It grew from the website to one sales rep to, by the time we sold to Champion One, what were there, 12, 13 of us?
Yeah. You know, what I liked about coming here is that the channel is vital to this industry, is that you have all of the integrators, VARs, resellers, and they're very important to our customers. One of the issues I had in the channel and working with some of these companies previously was the direct access to the customer, is that this is not just you're buying a laptop or a desktop. It is a little more complicated. There's a lot of testing, a lot of validation, a lot of questions, a lot of concern. You know, we use that term FUD. You remember fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
I learned that from you.
Yeah, a lot of people have fear, uncertainty, and doubt about this product. So a little bit different. And one of the struggles we had is we were very channel-centric, and we still are. However, I wanted the direct access to the end customer, because what would happen was, is you had a reseller kid cutting his teeth. He's 23 or 24 years old. He has a Cisco-funded head in his reseller. Cisco-funded head creates this. They send it to the end customer. End customer has questions, goes back to the reseller. The reseller goes back to the Cisco-funded head, and we just had this whisper down the alley.
Right.
I wanted the direct access to the end customer, and then they can place their orders wherever they'd like to, and we'll help with that. So we have partnerships in the channel with everybody. But my goal was, when I came over here, is to create a direct link between that lab, between our development team, our architects, and that way they have a point of contact directly within our organization. And then however they decide to fulfill those orders, at least they know who we are and what we do.
Yep.
So I don't know if that answered that question.
Yeah. For sure.
But I think that's one of the big differentiators for us as well, too, is that all of our customers have direct access to everyone within the organization. And then Approved Networks took on a life of its own, because what does everyone do? They go to Amazon and they look for something. And if they don't see it on Amazon, they go to Walmart.com or to Overstock.com. And the same thing that was happening with US Critical, right, was happening, you know, just like So Approved Networks was a way to combat that, but like I said, it kind of took on a life of its own.
Yeah.
And US Critical was primarily in the data center. You know, that was
Got
the US
it.
Critical brand was mostly data center driven. And I think the original intention of Approved was small to medium business.
Yeah.
Schools, universities, municipalities, people that want to place an order quickly online.
Yeah.
And then of course Champion One was the ISP telco side. We're all under the Approved family now, but we are all still kind of siloed. But again, Approved now is big data, just big search engines to everybody.
Oh, yeah. So now it's a huge gamut, right? It did take on a life of its own. Purchasing on the website isn't necessarily the main point of the website. It's a resource. It's a resource for our customers. It's a resource for industry knowledge in our products. Yeah.
So. Because people will look at some of our competitors. And everyone leads on price, I understand.
Yeah, so we give a lot more value than price, right? There we have a lot of resources. You can download data sheets. The customer can get whatever they need. And then they'll know what's coming next, right? We stay ahead of the industry.
Because we have the lab.
Yeah.
And because we do take returns back, every once in a while we see our competitor's product or an online company's product. The one thing we've never dabbled in, because of the companies we support, because of the big telcos and the data centers, is we don't dabble in off-spec. We don't dabble in pulls.
What do you mean by pulls?
The decommissioning business is a big portion of the business. As people have gone to the cloud, AWS, Azure, whoever you want to pick, you know, they just say, hey, we're going to move it all to the cloud. Asset dispositioning. They just get rid of all that equipment, whether it goes to Mexico, to Brazil, wherever it goes, or it comes back into our market. Who knows? But there are people that do remarket those products.
Gotcha.
And they're here in our backyard.
Right.
And so, for example, a lot of the 1 gig and 10 gig product that's out in the market today, a lot of that's pulled product. We don't dabble in that. We don't buy excess. We don't deal with off-spec.
Yeah, no, we're not. We're going directly to the custom manufacturer.
Yeah, so what you'll see is the whole point of that was the website. Yep. What we do is we have our own MSRP on the website. That's not actually the selling price of the product.
Good point.
It's just kind of a baseline price to say, and it's still significantly less than the major OEMs. But what people will do is look at another company online that just publishes the lowest price possible. Right. So what I'd encourage anyone that listens to this. Email us, call us. Don't rely on the website. The website is there to find product and price.
So I didn't bring you here to sell my website, but thank you. On every product, there's an option to request a quote. We do have pricing on our website, but that's not our bottom. That's not your bottom. This is the website's there for customers to be able to get in touch with us and get the best pricing possible. But thanks for the pitch for the website.
But if people are going to the website, that is something important to note.
Yeah.
That, you know, we're not the low-cost leader online.
No, we don't intend to be, for sure. And we don't intend to be the low-price leader when we go through a sales rep either, because we...
I'd encourage everyone to call me Michelangelo. That's what I do.
I don't have time.
I have enough of that. So.
Oh, that's funny. So do you have any success stories or case studies? Like, I know you can't mention your customers specifically, but is there something that you can share with us that you're particularly proud of that you've been able to accomplish for a customer since you've been here? Some way that you really kind of helped a project or a mission or a goal that a customer had, or some way you've made the world a better place?
You know, obviously we've been wildly successful over the past 7 years I've been here. So. Yeah. It's disappointing to see some of the change and through COVID.
Sorry.
And obviously we went through the two acquisitions, and I'm sad to see some of our friends and partners leave the company. But some of the success stories are is that this all started with a bunch of young kids in their 90s, and we were in our mid-20s, early
30s. In the 90s, or did you say their 90s?
The 90s. Well, I'm on the way to the 90s, but no, back in the 90s. But I think the success stories are really our ability to maintain those customers for 25 plus years.
Yeah.
Through all of this transition, through all of this change, and their confidence in our ability to create this lab, to create this, you know, our customers are the ones that helped us build all of this.
Right.
Is they just said, hey, out of sheer demand and volume, we have to find cost savings. But for them to partner with us and to be patient and share equipment with
us.
You know, so that's a huge thing for us. It's like, you know, we might not have access to that 800 gig switch or that 400 gig switch. We've had our clients send us cards, switches, because they want to help us develop this solution so they can save money or have quicker delivery schedules.
Quicker delivery.
And of course, purchasing people are driven by cost, engineers driven by solution. But some of the success stories I touched on, it's that customization, is like our clients coming to us and saying, Juniper doesn't produce this piece of equipment. Can you produce it? And then someone like Brian Patton, our VP of development, saying, yes, we'll figure it out for you. Or Kurt Dunneman, like I said, flying to Singapore or to overseas, but to try to develop those solutions or do custom coding, custom labeling. And then even the white labeling programs that we have for some of our partners that manufacture cabling or whatever product they are. So the white labeling program has took on a life of its own as well, too. So I'm just proud with our ability to be able to support the largest ISPs and telcos, some of the largest search engines in the world, to be able to support high-frequency traders and those types of platforms. It's just been a shocking, because we were just all, again, a bunch of young kids out of Orange County, that right place, right time, right situation.
I would say a bunch of surfer dudes.
Yeah, well, kind of, and some of them still are. You know who they are.
I know
who they
are.
We're still clinging to our youth a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
and
you know,
hairdos.
What I'm proud of is that it's, and I'm lucky, it's an incestuous business, and a lot of these people are my childhood friends. So if you went into, you know, the top five companies within this industry, I went to high school with those guys. We went to school together. We have stories of being, you know, childhood friends. And all of them have been wildly successful in their own niches, whether it's the channel, direct, online, whatever that might be. But I think the success of Proved Networks was the direct model, the direct access to our development team, our engineers in our lab, and our ability to have all of those partners in place and all those integrators willing to work with us and help us with those big companies. So I'm just a part of it. Like I said, I get to get up here and talk about everything everyone does. I don't actually do any of it.
You're so awesome, and you know we wouldn't even have anything to do if it weren't for you.
So the value of what I do is talk about everyone's ability to actually do something really productive. I can't code. I can't test.
Right.
I don't understand what Brian and that team really does and how difficult their challenges are. But again, our clients have also helped us do that. So that tells you that there was a need here, and we filled that need. Now what you see is there's a lot of noise in the industry, though. Yeah. And now it's you introduce everyone to an OEM alternative, and now they think all the OEM alternatives are alike. So we've gotten them away from the OEM. Now what we have to do is differentiate ourselves from all those other companies that are in the channel saying the same things we've said since the beginning of
time. Right, and we'll definitely have you back. The main point of the website is going to be more technical stuff and more industry trends, but we did want the people to know exactly why they should listen to us and who we are. So thank you so much. And we'll definitely have you back.
You know, and for our sales group and our team, you know, it's the same questions kind of over and over again.
Yep.
You know, is that, you know, what is the warranty? Will it work? When can you deliver all of, you know, it's not as complicated from the sales side as it seems.
Yeah.
It's just everything behind that that matters.
But,
you know, for all of the customers that might listen to this or the people that are interested in this company, it's for every objection they might have or any concern they might have, we've already heard that a million times from pretty much.
We're still here.
Yet we're still here and growing and evolving.
Been doing it for a couple decades, yeah.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, even the major OEMs have worked with us previously when it suits their need. So I can tell, you know, most of our customers confidently that they may even have some of our product in their network without even knowing
it. Without knowing it, right.
So, but
right on. Okay. Well, very good.
Thanks this was, I guess, a nice surprise for me. But
This is how we get you to come into the office. You've embraced the work from home life. So
I have indeed. And Nanog was great, and thank you. And
that was great,
I hope this answered your questions. I don't know if it did. But.
And, you know, maybe we'll come back again in the future and just talk about Nanog or future Nanog that we do. Those are great. Those are great places to meet our customers. They're
I'm here for you.
All right. Well, thank you, Micah, and thank you all for watching, and we'll see you again soon. Bye, guys.